I think anything is doable that we as a community decide we want. But we have to focus resources, we have to focus time, effort, energy, as a community, not just the police reaching out to people, but it really has to be from all sides.
Hi, this is Intersection. In August, the city of Columbia got a new police chief. The change came after some controversy and lots of conversation about community policing in Columbia and other issues, and it all culminated in the naming of Chief Jeff Jones to helm the city's police department. Chief Jones and I recently sat down to talk about policing and the community, the challenges of policing in Columbia and anywhere, and he shared a little bit about why he got into policing in the first place. The answer might surprise you. Since the time that this conversation was taped, another important dialogue has arisen in Columbia about policing policies, arrests, and Columbia Public Schools. This conversation does not address those issues, but you can see more on that topic at kbia.org. Now, here's our conversation with Police Chief Jeff Jones. Just get right to the challenges. What do you think are going to be the biggest challenges that you're looking ahead to?
Really, for me, it's opening lines of communication. And I know I say that a lot, but I've really worked hard internally to make the process of communication easier. We have to transfer what we've done internally, because we've had a lot of success there, out into the community. And I think we've had some success there, but we're really working toward opening that communication so that we can solve real problems instead of Band-Aid fixes.
When you say opening the lines of communication, are you really thinking about the community, or are you thinking more internally? You're probably thinking somewhat both.
Yes. It really all plays off of each other. One translates to the other. So when our police officers and our staff, and when I say our staff, you know, we have a lot of people that work behind the scenes and do a lot of good work so that officers can go out every day and be good police officers, stewards of our community. And without them, there are issues. So it's really about communication, not only between command staff and police officers, but police officers and support staff. And then that has to translate into the community so that we're having conversations before bad things happen.
You're talking about lines of communication between the officers and the community. Let me look at the officers. Dale Roberts with the Community Police Officers Association cited high turnover and low morale during the Burton tenure. He wrote, "Our long ordeal is over," in a press release after Burton's resignation. How much were these complaints justified? What have you been doing, and what do you want to do looking ahead on that?
There has been a lot of effort to empower police officers to come up with solutions. It's not uncommon for me to go to all three floors of the police department 5 minutes before our meetings on Wednesday and say, "Hey, we're getting ready to have a staff meeting. Anybody can come who wants to." Because there are people in our building that have great ideas who are never heard, and they didn't feel like they were able to present those ideas. So it was very important for me to empower them, not only out in the community, but inside the building, to come up with those and be able to voice their opinions and not feel like they were going to get their head chopped off for coming up with a new idea.
Okay, well, what you just described sounds really reasonable and perfect, but it also sounds a lot easier said than done. How do you do that? It sounds like a lot of it is walking around and FaceTime with people.
It is, but it's also, it's walking the walk. And I have people who we've had conversations and they've been disrespectful to me, and I'll wait till we're out of the room and say, "You can say just about anything, but you will not be disrespectful. I want you to speak your mind, but do not be disrespectful." And the very next meeting, that same person did not agree with me or didn't agree with someone else in the room. They voiced their opinion in a very respectful way, and their opinion was right. Their idea was better than mine, and we went with that idea. So when people see that progression, that I'm not out to harm anyone, they're not going to get in trouble at work for voicing their opinion, then I think it empowers them from the top down to give other people that same level of respect.
Okay. So a lot of it is having genuine motivation, a genuine sense of mission on the right things, having it not be about you or
right.
politics or pleasing other people, but knowing what your goal is and really being motivated by that and then bringing everybody else along into that.
Right. And we, you know, I regularly talk about community and everybody sticks a label on community policing. I know you've heard me say it. It's just good policing. And mm-hmm. we have a responsibility to really care for our community. We live here. We have families here. We raise our kids here. We have that responsibility in addition to the law enforcement side of policing. But the law enforcement side of policing, anybody who's ever known me as a police officer, I was passionate about that also. If you harm other people, I'm going to come find you. And I want them to have that same passion for helping people with services as they do for finding those people who prey on others.
I want to dive further into the community policing and your philosophy on that, which you've just mentioned, which has, of course, been a big issue here. But what's unique about policing in Columbia, Missouri, do you think?
Some of our, I won't even call them challenges, but things that are unique about us is, one, we have a journalism school. And the things that we do are not always conveyed in context. So it's really important that we try to help our media partners, and some media doesn't like being called partners, but we really are partners in getting accurate information to people. Not that it doesn't have to be adversarial at some points, but what is unique about us is that there are so many outlets that it's really difficult to make sure that everybody has the information in context. So that's one thing. The other thing that comes with that is we have a very young population here. You know, we have a university. We have several colleges, and there are a lot of young people who are on social media. It goes to context a lot. We have a lot of information that gets out, and it's not in context because it's someone's YouTube video or Facebook video or all of those other social media outlets that I don't use. But it's very unique in that it's hard to give context to what we're doing a lot of times because there are so many outlets for information.
If you and I were just like having a coffee and we weren't on the record, what would, and I ask you this question, what would you say, even though we are on the record, what would you like to see media doing better?
First, you'll figure out for me very quickly that whatever I say off the record, I just assume that people know because I'll say it on the record. I don't generally hide things from people.
That's great.
I think
what
I would like to hear or see journalists taking the time to listen, not just to the information, but the context, understand how their information might impact another person. I can give you an example of that here in a second. But really trying to be part of the community in a way that I don't know that we've really experienced a lot in the past. And a lot of times what I see, especially with younger reporters and even some that are not young in this business, they come in with an idea of what the story is going to be, and they are not open-minded enough to know that the story might change when they have more information.
Okay, you're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Janet Saidi. I'm talking with Police Chief Jeff Jones. He's been leading the Columbia Police Department since February. He's now in the job officially, and we're talking about the goals and the challenges of policing in Columbia. You can get more on this conversation at kbia.org. Chief Jones, one more sort of general question. What are your goals? You kind of mentioned some really great words that you said are not buzzwords, words like empowerment. How do those translate into sort of specific goals on your to-do list?
So eventually, and this will literally take years to get to, but I would like to take the 8 beats that we have in the city and shrink those in size so that we have 16 beats. So the reason for that is, you know, we call it geographic policing, community policing, neighborhood policing. We put all these labels on it, but really what we're talking about is giving people proximity to police officers so that they can talk left of an incident and have a relationship so that they can solve problems, hopefully so that there never is or there rarely is an incident. and they know how to handle that together. So to get to that and bring officers in to where they're in smaller geographical areas, obviously I will need more resources at some point. But with the resources I have, I want to see what I can do with that. And one of the goals is to have these officers that are in that first phase of this, actually, I guess it would be the second phase, because we really did it with our community outreach unit in the three strategic neighborhoods, and it's a similar model. But to give those officers the opportunity and the empowerment to solve problems in those small areas, to be in the community, to be part of the community, empower them to make decisions, to help guide this process. Because like a journalist who's new in this, I'll be getting information from this new process, and I may have to change some of it. But if we're all working together and communicating and working with the community, it's not us and them. We're part of this. I'm even encouraging officers to live in the beats that they're bidding for. So if we can eventually get there, I think that we will have all of those things that we talk about with trust and communication and transparency. We just have to get to that point, and it's a process.
When you said you like the idea of officers even living in the beats that they're sort of working in, how would that play out day to day? I mean, do you like the idea of this kind of idealistic view? You kind of think of sort of 1950s and 60s TV shows of just the whole community knowing the officer. Can it actually get to that where people know their officer, and is that doable?
I think so. I think anything is doable that we as a community decide we want, but we have to focus resources, we have to focus time, effort, energy, as a community, not just the police reaching out to people, but it really has to be from all sides. It cannot be us and them to get to that point, and that's really what I'm hopeful we'll get to as we move forward.
How does this fit in with community policing? You do say that community policing is just good policing, but how does that fit with what the city adopted, the community policing resolution? How does that fit into what you're thinking of as community policing and what you're doing? Is that something that we are able to implement, and what's the status of that?
It is. So that resolution was prior to my appointment, but really the overarching theme of that resolution is that our community has to be part of the solution, that we have to work with the community, that we have to identify these issues, that we have to include everyone in our community, not just those people who look like us, talk like us, or who don't look like us but are the most vocal. We really need to include everyone. And I think that's what that resolution, that's the heart of that resolution. That's what good community policing is. And when we can take that community caretaking side of policing and give mental health resources, counseling, child care, transportation, all of those things that are not necessarily functions of the city but functions of our community, and help direct people to those resources outside of a law enforcement event, then we have made huge strides in what people call community policing.
Do you need more resources and more money for that specifically?
Really soon, if we want to progress, we have to have more police officers. Our police officers are going call to call to call, so they're really reactive at this point, and that goes against everything that we want to do as a community policing organization. We want to be left of the incident, not responding to incidents. We are definitely working toward what the council wants, and I think everybody sees that. You will see from me in the next several months, once we get out of this budget process, a document that has some basic framework for where I want to be, the things I've talked about. None of it, I don't think any of it will be a surprise to anyone, but I'm just putting thoughts on paper, and a lot of that information has been a collaboration with other people in the community who will call me or text me or sit down with me at breakfast and go over things, and it's been years in the process. So we're definitely moving toward what people call community policing, good policing.
Okay. And you mentioned, you know, that kind of at heart of the community policing, the philosophy is to treat everyone well and with respect, you know, whether they look like you or not. Obviously, it's also really important, and we think about this in newsrooms as well, to have a diversity on your team and a diverse force. How are we with the diversity in our force? And is that something that you look at?
You know, we have officers of color. We have officers of different educational backgrounds, different lived experiences. But we can always do better. I am very hopeful. I think that we have some good things in process that will get us there. We can always do better. And I think whether we had the most diverse police department in the country, we still have to keep the mindset that we can always do better, so that we're always one step ahead of that and making sure that our community reflects our police department and our police department reflects our community.
Okay. Racial profiling has come up in the discussions, and this is the rate at which drivers and people, citizens from minority backgrounds, are pulled over and stopped. So it's looking at traffic stop data. Previously, I think the leadership said, show me the data. And there was a lot of kind of focus on the data and trying to parse the data and figure out, you know, what it says. Do you feel satisfied with data on that there's a problem with racial profiling, or do you think it's something we should look at? What are your views on that?
So my view is that there's obviously a problem in that we are stopping people of color at a higher rate. I don't know what the problem is, and I don't want to sound like the previous administration by saying that, because what I'm saying is absolutely different. And I think we have to look at the data, and it means something, but I think there are a lot of holes in that data that we have to fix. And instead of saying, hey, this doesn't mean anything, we can't draw any conclusions from it, and then just having the conversation stop, I think we need to look at what that data is and what it does mean. And if we can't draw conclusions from it, figure out what data we do need to draw or collect so that we can draw conclusions from it. And then have some input from police officers. And that's what we've done with this vehicle stop committee that I formed. It's got a police officer on it. It's got a police trainer on it. It has the head of the union on it. But it has people from the NAACP, Race Matters Friends, a school principal. These are people with a lot of lived experience, racially diverse, but these are well-educated, involved people who can look at a problem and hopefully objectively say, okay, what are the variables that affect a traffic stop? And are we able to change a practice, change a training? Is it bias? Is there, you know, as an officer seeing something and not even recognizing that they're making a decision based on bias, because we all have bias, we know that. But are they acting on that bias? And we have to look at that and have honest conversations about it. The very first meeting of that committee, I walked in and I told the officers, or the officer and the two other folks that I regularly meet with, and said, listen, I want you to have honest conversations in here. And sometimes you're going to say things that you're uncomfortable with, but you're not going to get in trouble from me. You know, the news media may report it and they may drag you through the mud, but you will not be in trouble for having an honest conversation, because we have to fix whatever problems we have as a community. I'm hopeful, and people say maybe I'm too optimistic, but I'm hopeful that through this committee we will find other variables that may not even be as closely related to traffic stops, but may affect traffic stops, that more broadly affect how we police in our community. And if there are other variables at a community or a state or local level, as far as legislation or other things, that we can try to impact so that our community is safer and policed better, and more importantly, that people are happy and they have the same opportunities, then we have to work toward that. And as a police department, we're committed to that. Thank you.
listening to Intersection on KBIA. We're talking with Police Chief Jeff Jones, who's at the head of the Columbia Police Department and has been in the role since February, but it was recently made official. We're talking about the goals and challenges of policing in Columbia. I'm Janet Samidi. You can hear more on this conversation at kbia.org. I wanted to actually get a little bit of your bio. What made you want to be a police officer?
My grandmother wanted me to be a police cadet. I was getting into trouble as a teenager. I had moved in with my grandmother. My grandmother was not someone that you told no, so I didn't have a very high opinion of the police, but I went and volunteered as a police cadet, a program that we've just started back up, by the way. And through that program, I met a lot of really good people who cared for me as an individual and really tried to give me opportunity to experience things at a community level, something I had not done before as a young person. I tell the story, I went into then Knowles Grocery Store, and I have some people I need to reach out to because I might be able to figure out who this woman was. But I was in uniform. We had directed traffic. I think it was a Memorial Day parade, and I was wearing my police uniform, and I went into Knowles Supermarket to cash the check that I got from washing dishes at Ron's Country Boy, my uncle's restaurant. And they used to ask for two forms of ID, and I had a similar uniform than one I'm wearing today. And I opened my pocket up to get my ID out, and she held her hand up and says, "Oh, we trust you. We don't need your ID." And I was hooked because, you know, we didn't grow up with a lot of means. My clothes always looked tattered. You know, I bought a lot of my own clothes. And someone, based on at least my perception of what she was saying, is that based on what I represented, she trusted me. And I immediately felt a sense of responsibility to that. And I was hooked. I felt like I could earn people's respect and still have the background that I came from. So that's where it started for me.
Do you think it affects your policing and especially your approach to different segments of the community, the fact that you have, as a person and as a young person, felt on the other side of the police? So you know what that feels like.
It has. I will tell you, probably the most influential part of how I police is being a narcotics detective. I was an undercover plainclothes narcotics detective for 5 years, and then I supervised that unit for another 3. So I spent 8 years in undercover work. And, you know, what I would normally have stereotyped as, you know, and we still label people, and I've made the mistake of calling people, you know, a crackhead or some other derogatory thing. We don't think about it when we say it because we think of people who are abusing drugs and being strung out as being lesser of a person. And I will tell you that some of the funniest, most enjoyable people that I was around were people who worked for me as informants. Some of the people I interacted with that I bought drugs from as an undercover detective were not bad people. They were just doing things that we were not comfortable with as a community, and we arrested them for it. So having that experience and working side by side with people who are living that lifestyle, seeing their families and how they interacted with their families, gives you a whole new perspective to where you're not so readily willing to pigeonhole them.
That sounds like a real eye-opening 8 years.
And it was.
Your perspective would also be interesting, Chief Jones, on, you know, the big initiative with the Missouri Department of Corrections and the state legislature, which has identified funds to have a different approach to keeping people out of jail when they're going into jail for substance abuse. I mean, our prison populations, like a lot of places, are on the rise. It's expensive to build prisons. So they're trying to get more creative about keeping people out of prisons by helping people rather than, you know, arresting them right away. And it seems like in some ways, having observed these conversations, it's kind of hardest with law enforcement. I've heard some county sheriffs kind of pushing back. They see the pain and they see the vulnerability of people, but they also say at the end of the day, they are breaking the law and we really do need to get them off the streets. What is your take on this larger initiative of, and really a kind of a national conversation on helping people that have these problems based on what you've seen on the front lines?
So there's no real clear delineation. There's a lot of shade there. The problem that comes with drug use specifically is the crimes that people will commit to get those drugs. So it's not always the drug use that we are comfortable with arresting people for. We do, but the bigger issue is that people are stealing, burglarizing, robbing, prostituting, sex trafficking others, doing really all kinds of things that people should be held accountable for. But they're doing that because of a substance abuse issue. So it's not this clear delineation of we shouldn't arrest drug users, because there are times that we should. Especially when we know that they're, or suspect that they're doing these other things. And sometimes we can't prove it, but we know it. You know, we generally know what people are doing. We just can't prove it sometimes. And we have a responsibility to the Constitution, so we don't just go arrest them when we can't prove it, right? But we know as community members that people are doing these things. And sometimes it's best for the community for us to keep them safe, to put someone in jail. And you know, there's a lot of processes in the criminal justice system, the jail system in particular, that give people treatment, drug court, yeah, which is a great program, that really address the substance abuse so those other things don't happen. And sometimes that's the mechanism to get people help.
That's it for Intersection this week, featuring a conversation with Columbia Police Chief Jeff Jones about the goals and challenges of being the City of Columbia's top law enforcement official and why he wanted to become a police officer in the first place. Thanks for joining us for Intersection this week. I'm Janet Saidi. To hear more on this conversation and other recent stories about issues involving community policing, you can see more at kbia.org.